The special meeting of the Cambria Community Services District for February 1st, 2010 will come to order. Will everyone please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag and country?
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we go on to the next agenda item, let me explain that this is couched as a special meeting, but in reality it's a continuation of the meeting that had been previously scheduled for January 26th. We had a severe storm, as everyone knows, and we had a power outage here in this part of town that affected the Veterans Memorial Building. So we thought the prudent thing to do would be to cancel the January meeting and reschedule it for February 1st. So that's why we're here today. With that, let me announce that we do have a quorum. Director D'Amico will not be with us. I understand that he is on vacation. Council, is there a report from closed session?
There's nothing to report.
Thank you. That brings us to the first public comment period. And I have a request to speak from Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President Sanders, board, staff. Today I brought a little presentation demonstration. Before I get into that, I'd like to pay homage to former director Elon Funky Blue. It has been 3,022 days since the CCSD board approved a new letter of intent to serve. And I'd also like to say it's amazing what this community can accomplish when it puts its mind to it and has something that it cares about. Less than a week after those horrible storms, I was over on the west part of the ranch, Fiscalini Ranch, and I could walk every single path I went down. Somebody went in there. I don't know how many people it took. I don't know if it was staff or if it was volunteers, but that place, there were a lot of trees that came down, and all of those pathways were cleared. So it's amazing what we can do in this community. So I was out, here's the story. I was out walking my dogs. This won't take very long. I was out walking my dogs one day and noticed a hydrant buried about halfway. So I called Chief Miller, and he promptly addressed the situation. And when I asked about what the maintenance program was for the fire hydrants, the response was that money was tight and budgeting is difficult, and really we're only as strong as our weakest link. And this board and previous boards has made fire protection and prevention something that's a very high priority, and there's evidence that it's been taken seriously over the years, including it was given as a reason for Pine Knoll's tanks and emergency access road on the West Ranch. There's three on-duty personnel 24/7, and then we have mutual aid agreement with Cal Fire. The fire department conducts regular safety inspections of remodels in existing buildings. We have the fuel hazard reduction program and serious enforcement of it if you don't clear your lots. And water master plan is supposed to benefit fire flows and storage. Well, if we can't maintain the hydrants, it's a problem. Because if you can't open them or find them, it's going to be a problem fighting a fire. So me and my dogs have walked around Cambria for the past month, starting on December 29th. And all those spots are where we took pictures of hydrants. All of the pictures are available online. I'm not going to have them all today. I just wanted to point out the ones that were really an issue. These are ones that are susceptible to being buried because of their location. And a lot of these are on Lodge Hill. And you'll notice a lot of them are on dirt roads. On dirt roads, there's no blue reflectors because there's nothing to glue the blue reflector to. So it's especially important that those hydrants are easy to find. Some of them look a little neglected. This is up on Cambria Pines Drive on the very top of town. and some are just kind of buried. That one was... a lot of them, if there wasn't a blue reflector, there's no way I would have found it. Oh, this is a good one. There's the hydrant. You pull up to that corner, there's no way you'd know a hydrant was there. Fortunately, there's a blue reflector there. Some people have taken to landscaping around the fire hydrant to make it look nicer. I have no idea if that affects the ability of the fire department to use it or not, because I am not an expert. I thought this was actually a good example. I don't know if you can see, right in the middle of, right there is the fire hydrant. And this person actually made a pretty clear pathway to go in there to put the... Hydrants are supposed to be at least 40 feet from buildings, ideally, but that was actually not a bad example. And again, landscaping hides a lot of them. This one is my favorite one. There is a fire hydrant there, and it's pretty close inside that person's yard. This is my other favorite one. This is right, you can see Shamwell Park right up there. There's the fire hydrant, completely covered. Now, according to what other fire departments do and expect and other communities do, the landscaping around the fire hydrant is the responsibility of the property owner and not the fire department. But the fire department could mention it. This is a very nice little pine tree that will probably cause a problem to that fire hydrant eventually. And then there's some serious neglect and rusting problems. That one didn't come out as nice as I thought, but it's very rusty. This one's not 3 blocks from the fire station. There were numerous times when there was a car, and this car is covered and clearly stored right there. And it was not unusual to see cars parked right in front of them. So the hydrants need some maintenance, and I was glad to see in the staff report that it looks like that there's a plan going forward to take care of that. And I would love to come back and show some pictures of that these have been fixed. If you want to go and see them, that you can go look at all of the pictures that we've taken at aboutcambria.com/hydrants, and those will be up pretty much for as long as you like. I appreciate you giving me the little bit of extra time and the ability to use the overhead for this. Thank you.
Not a problem. Thank you for your presentation. Any questions of Amanda Rice? The general manager is going to report on a hydrant maintenance program when we get to that part of the agenda. The next request to speak is from Valerie Bentz.
I wanted to speak about the proposed desalinization plant and the proposed testing at Shamwell Park. I'm very concerned about those plans. I have read the report in detail, and I have done some studying into alternative means of obtaining adequate water, and I'm not finding answers to a lot of my questions in any of the documents. For example, in the report I read, there was a check mark that there was no possible toxic danger from the test wells, and there's evidence that we have mercury veins going out there, and some scientists have done a test to show that if even the littlest bit of mercury, like 1/1,000,000,000 of a quantity, gets into the water, it could be devastating for the wildlife and for the water itself. Another question about the safety has to do with the air quality. The air from the diesel engines with those enormous drills, for people who live nearby, those fumes are known to be carcinogenic. And that is sort of given a little higher check, but essentially passed over. So I would like more questions answered about that. It could be dangerous. A third one is the sandbar outside of the creek where a lot of fish and wildlife are breeding. That would be disrupted, and that could disrupt the wildlife in this river. So I have a lot of questions about that. The other, that's Mike, those are my questions coming from the heart. I also have questions coming from the head, and those have to do with the costs. I still haven't seen a clear statement of what a desalinization plant would cost Cambrians if it were fully built. I realize that through the graces of your predecessors, we have somewhere in the federal government $9 million. But my initial investigations show that those plants can cost up to $50 million to build. Also, the maintenance costs of them are pretty enormous. I have an estimate here that it could range up to needing six full-time people to maintain at least $60,000 a year salary. So we have never really received, an adequate statement of what would those costs be. Also, there's a number of persons who have put forward over the years alternative ways of saving water. I've looked into them personally and found that if people would install gray water systems, if they have gardens, they could save as much as 50% of their water. And Steve and I are looking into having this done very soon on our property. And some of these gray water systems, we went to a workshop in Morro Bay sponsored by their CCSD about gray water systems and how with much, much less cost, every homeowner could save maybe 50% of their water from gray water systems. Another idea that I've researched a bit is that there are over 100 natural springs in Cambria that could be stored, water could be stored in a sustainable way. A third idea that I've researched a little bit is if we would put in an updated ECHO waste treatment system, that our waste treatment system apparently uses an enormous amount of water to process. And at least half of our water, of the water used there, could be saved with a more eco-friendly waste treatment system. A friend of mine, Jim Brunel, in town, did a study some years ago about some ponds that could be put up in the creek, and that he feels that this idea was just sort of brushed over and put down as, oh, the cow ponds, and laughed at. But he's a soil scientist. He's been a retired professor of soil science, and I think his idea was brushed over altogether too easily, especially given the cost of those other ideas would be much lower. So I'm going to write this up, and I'm going to continue to do research on it, but I implore you to really give the citizens of Cambria some alternatives and some actual facts on if this goes forward, what would it actually cost, and how sustainable is it, and what other alternatives could we have that could be much more eco-friendly and friendly to our pocketbooks as well. One other thing, I'd heard recently that San Simeon also built a desal plant some years ago, and it's sitting there unused. I haven't had time to research into why it was shut down, but there it is. And I also used to live in Santa Barbara when they built one there at around $50 million, and it's been put out of use. The maintenance costs are too high. So I really would implore you to get more information to the citizens and research this more. I am going to put some of this in writing as I gather more data. Thank you very much.
Ms. Benz, have you read the Water Master Plan?
I have some time ago. The most recent thing I read was the report by the Corps of Engineers with all those boxes on it.
I think if you read the Water Master Plan, at least some of the answers that you're seeking you'll find.
Okay, I'll be sure and read that before I write up my final
memo. Any questions of Valerie Benz?
I'd like to ask one question, Ms. Benz. Have you checked the mercury levels out of the Nacimiento Lake, which is being used by, I guess, a large section of the county or about to be used?
No, I haven't. I'm not a scientist or a biologist.
No.
just a concerned citizen with a lot of questions, just beginning to research this, and I apologize for not having all the data.
It might be worth looking because there are mercury mines that feed into the Nacimiento Lake to the point where some of the fish are not edible because of that reason, but they still feel they can take public water supply from there, so there might be some points there.
Oh, so there's a problem with mercury there also.
It's not necessarily a problem, but they have the mercury there.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next request to speak is from Jeff Hellman.
Hi, Jeff Hellman, Cambria. Can't eat the fish, but you can drink the water. That's great. I heard from a neighbor of mine that a water main broke and caused some serious. A water main broke was repaired and rebroke, and it caused a lot of damage to several houses. This is just what I heard from a neighbor, so you'll have to tell me what the actual situation is. But apparently the CCSD admitted to negligence, and they're going to pay for new floors, new drapes, a lot of things, and it's going to cost several hundred thousand dollars to do this. I would like to ask the board if this appears to the board to be a case of serious negligence on the part of management in decision-making, whereas they might take funds and buy new oak cabinets for our rental offices or go on junkets to Washington, D.C. with a lot of friends and do stuff, or spend money on consultants and lots more consultants and lots more consultants. But
Mr. Hellman, who's going on junkets to Washington, D.C.?
Oh, I'm referring to some of the previous things that I saw in the expenditures that just seemed bizarre to me. But here's the point, okay? A water main broke. Why isn't our money going into, keeping water mains good so we don't have to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars from negligence and damage? I mean, in other words, I'm questioning the priority of spending bizarre amounts. Is there any opinion on the board, whether this was, if what I heard was that it was that the CCSD admitted to negligence and they're paying for these repairs. Is this true? And if this is true, maybe you ought to reevaluate how our money is spent. I know that every time somebody comes up here, it's really directly or indirectly in regards to that. But here's a big chunk of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars perhaps, to cover the negligence of the CCSD. I think the board ought to be looking at creating a situation where the management makes decisions that are best for the long-term infrastructure and financial health of the community and not all directed towards the benefits and pleasures of the management and staff. Can you explain to the public here now about what happened with this situation?
I assume you're talking about the water main break on Windsor.
I think that was it.
Yeah.
Caused damage where we're going to have to pay for a lot of repairs.
Madam General Manager, would you like to give us a report on that? Okay. No, actually, let's have the report now.
First of all, I want to be on record that management was not negligent in this particular water main break, and that we are not mismanaging or irresponsible for the fiscal condition of the CCSD, so I want to be of record to Mr. Hellman's comments. The water main break at Huntington and Windsor, the result was as part of our standard operating procedures. The first time it broke back in early to mid-December, there is a band that gets placed around the pipe. It is a 6-inch, as I recall, or 8-inch pipe water main. It comes down off of Huntington at a slant. It's right across Windsor, so the break was on the Windsor side, or the Windsor portion of the pipe. It broke. We fixed it, putting in this band, which is our SOP, our standard operating procedure. A month later, it breaks further up the pipe, which was about 8 to 9 feet further. And then it's evaluated by the licensed operator, in this case, Jim, and Bob Gressens was involved, and they replaced 10 to 12 foot of the section of pipe. And we also replaced it with PVC. There's ground movement. There's a real high PSI, pounds per square inch. It's about 120 in that area in order to get up that hill. And so this has been in place now for almost 4 weeks and appears to have resolved the problem. So that was the fix that occurred. There was water damage as a result of 120 PSI. There's water that's going to hit all of the low places. Fortunately, we have staff that lived over in that area, and Courtney up the grove phoned it in when she noticed she had potential pressure issues. She called the on-call guy. He was there within 15 minutes, and the water was cut off. It still means that there was a lot of water that traveled down into those lower-lying areas. We alerted SDRMA so that they would have an adjuster immediately available, and they're handling the liability end of that. But there was no negligence on behalf of us, or there's no admission of negligence on our behalf.
Thank you for clarifying that. I was repeating what I heard from a neighbor. But I would just request that the ratepayer funds that go into the CCSD really go into the nuts and bolts of the system, you know, the pumps and the pipes and everything else, and then we can circumvent this. And I think if that was the first priority of the CCSD, a lot of us would, you know, feel a lot better about how the flow of money is going in this community.
Please keep in mind, you've got the confluence of two events going on here. First of all, as the general manager said, it's a geologically unstable area.
That registered.
Secondly, we've had an inordinate amount of rain, which just exacerbates the problem. Mm-hmm. So these things happen. But having said that, we hear your message and appreciate it.
After all, the nuts and bolts are the foundation of everything the service district is about.
Could I just add, as member of the Utilities Commission, along with Director D'Amico, we do evaluate those on quite a constant basis, and as a result of our evaluation, we've authorized general manager to do a number of repairs which were obviously needed. Mm-hmm. So we are on top of that. There's very little which involves safety of the community which we've put aside. In fact, none.
That's reassuring. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Mr. Ellman. The last request to speak for the first public comment period is from Elizabeth Bentonhausen.
Thank you very much, Mr. President and Board. It sounds like I'm speaking to what just happened, but I'm not. Our toilet had one of those regular problems, one of our toilets. And so we had a plumber in to come fix it, and I remembered Director Chaldicott always warning people about not letting the toilet run. And so we are very attentive to that, and I thank you, Director Chaldicott, for your constant reminders on that. But the plumber was exceedingly helpful. He said, "May I check your pressure regulator?" Well, I had not heard of the pressure regulator except when we bought the house 8 years ago. And the guy checked the pressure regulator. You don't, everybody know what a pressure regulator is?
Yes,
where
we had
the,
you
do, I'm sure, sir.
No, we had a, Ms. Bentonhausen, we had a presentation on that here at a CCSD meeting about two or so years ago. It was
excellent.
Particularly important
excellent.
For those who live on Park Hill.
No, excuse me, sir. I'd like to finish, and then you may add that. Okay. But the pressure regulator issue was not all that clear 2 years ago when I was there, because I did not understand that it's the responsibility of the property owner regularly to have the pressure regulator checked so that it's not above 50 per square inch on the pressure. The one we just had, we put it in new 8 years ago, I thought it would last eternally. Of course, it was now back up to 100, and we had it replaced. It means simply that if you don't want rampant water pressure for whatever cosmological reasons to run up into your house, you better have your pressure regulator checked on the intake of the water system to the house at least quarterly, if not semi-quarterly. I'm sure it was an excellent presentation, Director Sanders. It was exquisitely informative to the populace of Cambria. All of us have excellent memories except me. And so I bring it up again today to warn people that they better have the pressure regulator checked on the water intake for their house. Thank you.
It's a very good idea. Thank you.
Actually, could I add that the district did offer a tester at one time. I'm not sure if we do right now.
Do we still have the device in the district office?
Yes, we do.
Anybody who is interested in checking the pressure regulator on their hookup themselves is free to come down to the district office, and you can borrow the little device that will measure the pressure that your pressure regulator is running at.
Just a question. General Manager, how does that function? I mean, where does it go so that they understand where it would be placed?
Bob, will you get into the technical aspects of the check thing, please? Yeah,
sure. I think this came up when we did the East-West Ranch pipeline project.
It did.
Where the pressure zones changed. We still can loan out gauges, pressure gauges. A lot of people just put them on an outside hose.
Hose bib.
Bib.
Yep.
Test it that way.
Good.
So they're free of charge to borrow a pressure gauge from the front office. I'm sure we can find the ones that were, I guess, it was much more in demand back at that time frame. I don't know if we've had any recent requests for that, but we certainly can accommodate people for that purpose.
I might add that they're very failure prone. These things last perhaps 3 to 5 years. And because with all the sediment and so forth, they continually go out of balance. So it's a good thing
to
check.
I think that's a good point.
I didn't realize we had something like that. That's excellent. Mm-hmm. Good.
Okay. I have no more requests to speak during the first public comment period.
Members of the audience?
Yes, sir. You can. Usually we like to have you fill out a form, but it's not a life or death thing. So come on up.
I appreciate that.
Sure.
There was a lady.
Your name, please.
Roger Andriola.
Yes, sir.
Lady spoke earlier, asked a couple of economic questions. What the board's estimated cost of the desalination plant would be, and what the annual maintenance would be thereafter. And I believe you, Mr. Sanders, asked her if she read the Master Water Report.
Mm-hmm.
I take it you have read that report?
I have.
Okay. Could you share with us who have not those two figures?
I'm going to have the district engineer respond.
Okay. I don't have it memorized in exact dollars, but I'll get close. Basically, there were several reports by Kennedy Jenks engineers that were done, I think, in the 2003, 2004 time frame that were incorporated by reference into the Water Master Plan. And they got into quite a bit of detail as far as what the fixed costs and the variable operating costs were. We've updated that number and have had it posted on our website for quite some time. So if you go to CambriaCSD.org and just click on projects, it's a drop-down menu, and go to desalination project, there's an overview. And at the bottom of that overview, we have the cost of the project listed right there. We did it with and without renewable solar power. So that's where I'm stumbling a little bit. Without solar power and inflated to midpoint construction, it was around $0.7 million. And with renewable power, it was up in the $20 to $21 million range. Total project cost. Does that answer
21,
your question?
Yeah. $21 million to build it, and then how much?
That's with renewable power. We need to update the rate study that was done by Kennedy Jenks, but back at the time they did it, it was around a 9.9% rate increase to cover the operating costs of the desalination facility.
And the annual maintenance thereafter, operating costs?
There was a
figure, what your estimate is?
Cost. I think the analysis had one operator additional to cover the cost of operating the plant. It wasn't five or so, it was one. I'd have to get back to you on the exact numbers from those reports. I don't carry all that in my head, but you can track them right to our website. All the reports are on our website.
Can I make a suggestion to the board?
Sure.
The board may not be aware of this, but people in the audience like the board to be willing to provide information. And when a lady asks for two simple figures that you've been dealing with for months, you can direct her to read stuff and go to the library, but it would be very helpful to the public if you've read your own reports to simply disclose those two figures as best you can.
Sure.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but we don't carry those figures around in our heads. As we've advertised for years, all of the information is on our website, And anybody who has a technical question like that can call the district office and get an immediate answer.
It's also helpful to the public that's assembled here. If you have a build-out cost, if you've read about it and studied it for months and years, if it's $21 million, just share it.
Well, there's another factor, too, that I think the reason for some hedging that goes on is that we don't know exactly what the project total is going to be yet. The degree of pipelines, the degree of location could affect some of these costs. So you have to give a little bit of leeway from the standpoint of not having a very, very specific project. It's a general, the numbers that you're being given in those reports is the expected cost of a plant of that size. But until you get to the exact location, the exact amount of water that is used and the distances traveled and the pumping and such, can't give you an exact figure. Now, I think when we get to that point where you come to some kind of environmental impact report where you're really describing the exact project that you want to do, then I think it's very appropriate to be able to say this is what this project would cost. And I think your question and Ms. Ben's question is very, very appropriate at that time. But right now you have to understand that some of these are general figures of what would a facility of this size, this operation, and other places, what have they ran. And that's why you get numbers that are 16 to 17 million without power, 20 to 21 million with power. And so please give us a little bit of leeway there.
Yeah, just a final comment. We understand and we fully appreciate what you're saying. Yes, it's not an exact figure. Okay.
There is another item, too, that may I just respond. For example, if this is going to be a wet year, which it appears to be, we may not turn on a diesel plant for the whole year. So the operating cost will basically be zero. In a dry year, the operating cost, it may be on for the whole year. And everyone wants a number. Well, it's something between zero and 100, you know. And so most people aren't prepared to say, well, to listen to the what-ifs on that. And so it's like how much is it going to cost you to run your car each year? Well, it depends how many miles you're going to drive. And if you don't know how many miles, you can't see what the costs are. And that's just a typical thing that people want us to give the maximum number and then run with it and say, look, it's much too expensive. That's right.
Okay, I have no more requests to speak during the first public comment period, so we will move on to item number 3, which is the agenda review. Are there any additions, deletions, or consent calendar items to be pulled?
I would like to comment on the public comment.
I'm sorry,
You saw my hand.
I did not see your hand.
Certainly did. We had eye contact.
We have a second public comment period.
I just want to say that I have read that it costs as much to have a desal plant shut down as it does to run it.
We'll take a 5-minute recess.
It takes
Thank you. Number 3. Meeting will come back to order. We are on item number 3, which is the agenda review. Are there any additions, deletions, or consent calendar items to be pulled? Board members? Staff?
Item 9E, please pull it. We'll bring it back for the next meeting.
Continue it to February 26th, correct?
25th, isn't it?
25th.
Yes.
I'm sorry. 9E.
Yes, 9E.
9E. Okay. Any other additions, deletions, or consent calendar items to be pulled? Apparently not. Then the agenda will stand as revised. There are no acknowledgments or presentations this afternoon, so we will move to item number 5, which is special reports, and we do have a representative from the Sheriff's Department here today, Commander Hall. Welcome back.
Welcome. Hi, my name's Ben Hall. I'm the commander with the Sheriff's Department, currently responsible for the Coastal Patrol Division that handles Avila Beach up to the Monterey County line. In about the last 30 days in Cambria, we handled about 173 calls for service and took 24 reports. Last year, same time, we had about 233 calls for service and 45 reports. We had a general, what we responded to was just a wide assortment of calls. One thing I will focus on to now is what I see a trend in, particularly right coming up in the Cambria area. That's where nationwide actually is these skimming devices that are used for capturing ATM information or your credit card information. Even more so, what they're doing these days is they're not just capturing the information on your credit card, they're capturing your PIN number. And we've seen a lot of different things that are going on out there. For example, at an ATM location, you have a small camera with a recording device where someone's standing, you know, or in a car watching what number you put in, what PIN number you put into your particular account. And the only, you know, only thing we have I suggest for that is whenever you use your ATM, particularly when a PIN, make sure, you know, use it at a bank, ideally. And ideally, even beyond that, is go inside the bank and use, you know, when you're going to, you know, use your ATM with a PIN. Unfortunately, what we're seeing today, oftentimes, is they're actually disconnecting. For example, the come into a gas station, for example, where the gas station is closed, and they may come in, they get the keys to that, and they actually swap out some of the electronics inside, so that they record not only your ATM or your credit card number, but they also get your PIN number. And then some of the smarter ones are even waiting 3 or 4 months before they actually activate these things. So, you know, you think, gosh, was it, you know, when you look on your credit, on your bank statement, you think, oh, something happened. I see it come up on Monday. I wonder what I did that weekend. It may have been 2, 3, 4 months, you know, down the way. So whenever you use your using a PIN, try to protect that entry in there. Use it at something that you know has some credibility, like your banks. The bank ATMs tend to have a lot more security attached to them. You know, look around, see if there's something unusual that's happening at your particular ATM, like someone decided to put up a new little box for some, you know, some folders or something of that nature, because sometimes they'll put cameras in them. Better yet, just check your statement. Look very closely at it, because sometimes they'll come in with a small amount, and then they'll hit your account with 3 or 4 times where they're, you know, down in L.A., and next thing you're in the Valley, and next thing you know they're up in San Jose on 3 or 4 consecutive days. So, you know, that's the thing. Actually, I've seen here in Cambria the last month we had, I think, 4 of these type of ATM thefts, you know, where someone has captured the credit card number along with the person's PIN number, and then they, you know, taken a loss on their account. So we had a similar thing happen in Los Osos, where I believe one of the gas stations there, the actual ATM was, you know, violated, so to speak, and they got their numbers off that. Then you see a lot of them coming in. So if it's anything like Cambria, you'll see a lot of residents from, if it's anything like Los Osos, you'll see a lot of residents in Cambria that will become victims also. So, you know, just protect your PIN and watch your account. Any questions?
Good advice. Any questions of Commander Hall? The press has a question.
No. The losses, what I'm talking about, are ones that occur usually someplace down in, let's say, Los Angeles County. You'll see something like on one day it'll be $500 taken out of an account in Los Angeles. The next day it may be in Fresno or San Jose. The third day it'll be up in San Francisco. Or you might, not an ATM machine, but someone will go to a gas station, and instead of using the credit card side of that card, they use the ATM. They'll put that in, and then they'll put their PIN number in. And what I'm seeing here, not just in San Luis Obispo County, but U.S.-wide, is people will come in, and they will get into those machines, and they'll plug in their own circuit, so to speak, circuit board. And then, so when you come in, they not only capture the information on that credit card, but it also captures the PIN when you put it in. So my recommendation is when you do go to a gas station, you go to a convenience store or something where maybe the security is not as good as your ATM machine at a bank, don't use that side of it.
Good answer. Any other questions of Commander Hall? Ma'am, you have a question? Come up to the. Ma'am, can you come up to the microphone? They can't pick you up on the tape unless you speak into the mic.
I would just ask, is it the ATM choice that makes the difference, or when choosing the credit card choice, is that a different story?
I don't find it's particularly the bank. It's not your bank card or which bank you're shopping with. It's where you're using your card. That generally happens. I said, if you go to a bank or you go inside the bank, you're going to be relatively safe. If you go to a convenience store where they don't have full security on your machine, or you go to a gas station that's not 24 hours, for example, and then you put your PIN in there, that's where we're seeing your PIN numbers being captured.
So with a credit card, though, excuse me, you don't use a PIN? They often ask a zip code or something?
Yeah, they may ask for a zip code.
So that's still at risk is what I'm wondering?
But the difference is with your PIN, you'll talk to your bank, you'll find out that with a PIN number, they will say, the banks will say, you are personally responsible because it's being protected by your personal PIN. Whereas a credit card, you are maybe liable up to $50. And usually the credit card companies, I find, have been waiving that charge. But in the last ones we see in Los Osos, a lot of the banks have been, they have been honoring, so to speak, or covering these losses. But if you call your own bank, you'll find out that they'll say, well, if it's having to do with your ATM and a PIN.
Get it on the tape.
This is news to me, and I am sort of in a related security business. And Cheryl was just saying, so if you can qualify this, I was not aware that one card served a dual purpose. I thought it was my aging process that made me say, yeah, I thought I did a credit card. but can you explain further? In other words, if I take out a card and it's my credit card, it could also be used as an ATM card? And who differentiates?
No, I don't think that's what he's
sometimes
saying.
Sometimes when you get your ATM or your debit card, you'll also say it's a MasterCard, for example, or a Visa card also. So you have an option oftentimes when you put that card in, whether or not you're going to put it in and it takes it, use it like a debit card where you put a PIN in versus your credit side of it. There's two sides. At least in my card, it is. I have a MasterCard, which I just changed a PIN on last week.
Yeah, what's your PIN number, Commander?
Yeah. Actually, with all my PINs, I probably couldn't remember it, But this one here says it's MasterCard at the bottom, okay? It says it's a debit card, MasterCard. So I could go to some place, I swipe this, and I don't have to put a PIN in for that particular side of things. But I couldn't do that and just get cash, for example, at an ATM. I'd have to put a PIN in to get my cash. That makes sense? I think I lost you.
Yeah, no. In other words, the bank has the option of treating it as a credit card or a debit card, depending on how
On the credit card side, they'll immediately take your money out. Okay, but it's not protected by your PIN. So you could put it in, and it's not protected by your PIN, and you can still charge. Like I could go to the gas station here, I could use this card right here, and I could still get my gas, but I wouldn't put my PIN in. Now, if I go to the bank and to an ATM there or any other place, or let's say the grocery store, and I want to get cash back, then they're going to require that I put a PIN in. That's another thing. If you look at a lot of your grocery stores even today, if you look at the back of that little box, they sometimes have like a security tape on there. And that's to prevent these sort of things.
Thanks.
I really need a bank representative here to give the
No, I
the
think
good
you,
answer.
You gave a very good explanation, I think. That's great. Very good information. Any other questions of Commander Hall? Apparently not. Thank you, Commander, very much.
I met with Greg Sanders and Peter Chaldicott. They were the former executive committee in December, and we discussed the policy. They asked me questions with regard to how we procedurally process them. We talked about the number of payment plans we currently have with customers, which is at an all-time high. It's approximately 36 payment plans where we make plans for customers who have to not only keep their current bill current, but they make payments on anything that was past due. And so that's keeping in direction with the board to work with customers during these particularly difficult economic times. So after our discussions, the staff and the executive committee determined that the 12-month payment relief is a good policy. It is one that's easy and simple for staff to administer, besides the fact that it's been good for customers. So I just wanted to report back that we had accomplished that.
Good.
The voluntary lot merger program, we have the up-to-date report. As you notice, for the past 6 months, there's been no activity in lot mergers, and that's as a result, we believe, unfortunately, in the increased cost from San Luis Obispo County. So subsequently, we have, and just in the past couple of months, asked or approached the board. You considered increasing the participation of the CCSD in the program, and so now we're hoping to generate some business. That's why we all received an updated flyer with our utility billing. Staff mailed out to all vacant parcel owners this past week the flyer, so this is the first time for them, and we'll see what kind of business it generates. On this report, you'll see that $30,000 fee that the board approved with regard to a conversion, EDU conversion process with Granville Homes. And I note also in here that with the next report, you'll see the new increased objective moving up to the 592 lots from the previous 394 lots. So, you know, we're at 90% with the current objective. That's a really good thing for these past 2 years. It far exceeded anything that the BRP Citizens Finance Committee thought. And I think their new goal is definitely something that is achievable. So we'll see how it goes now with the increased funding. Moving on to the litigation update, I just provided this update since we were doing the mid-year budget review and explained and brought up to date the litigation costs. It was a former question, I think, by Director McKinnon, but while we were doing this budget, it was, you know, a good time to just bring them up and then also to report on the status of our cases so that the public knew that we do move these things along and try to get them to some $35,000 that the CCSD has expended in defense costs, basically, to defend us in these cases. Just as a summary for the Burge case, I told you that in the staff report at the time at publication that we were expecting a judgment from the Second District Court of Appeals, and we received it, and we prevailed. We're going to find a way to get it up on the website because I got to tell you, I get calls from customers who receive notices or mailings from not from Mr. Burge necessarily, but from an associate of his, Michael Erickson, this Unclog group. And I want to ensure by them seeing the judgment that maybe they'll sense that, okay, this is at least a resource that they can review, okay? Mr. Burge has sued us 5 times in the past decade, and we prevailed every time. So I just wanted to report that since the publication, we've got judgment on the Burge case. In Mr. Lindsay, there is a writ proceeding in the San Luis Obispo Superior Court, and there is a case management conference set in May, but the initial status conference that was conducted this past week in the bankruptcy court has been continued, and that's because the trustee has an attorney now, and they're in the process of reviewing. So our district council agreed to an extension. So February 16th is when that initial status conference has been continued to. The Warren case has been settled. I've signed all the documents based on board direction on behalf of the CCSD. This is a $5,000 case that SDRMA is paying on behalf of the CCSD as our liability insurer. That check has already been submitted and paid. There's just this technicality that has to occur on February 11th where the court basically approves all the stuff that we've all already signed. So all the parties have signed the settlement documents, but that case is now concluded. The Land Watch Holly case versus the district, I just wanted to comment because others have made some statements with regard to settlement offers that were extended to the CCSD by Land Watch. It was basically a repeat of their claims of the case. So it wasn't any new news. It wasn't anything that we felt was diligent in trying to come to settlement with the case. So I just wanted to ensure that we reported back. We weren't trying not to settle the case. It was basically a repeat of their claims. We did have the case management conference last week in Judge Tangeman's court in Paso Robles, and he has scheduled the hearing on the writ petition for May 3rd of 2010. And then he gave us a briefing schedule between March 15th and April 16th. So that's new news since we went to court last week. In small claims court, I represent the CCSD as general on those judgments. So the other one that we were able to settle, and I'm real appreciative to working with Monique Madrid because she helps me a lot in these litigation matters, that was another fire hydrant matter at Berwick in Wales, and this was back in May of 2008. And we had been working with SDRMA and the parties and who had hit, there were actually two cars that hit this hydrant. You know, the CCSD has costs, replacement costs when they have to replace the hydrants. In this case, it was about $2,700. And we try to go after the parties if we know who they are so that the community is protected and their infrastructure is protected. There was just miscommunications between insurance companies is what apparently it occurred. And whenever we got down to them filing against us in small claims court and it got down to getting subpoenas issued, all of a sudden, everybody was willing to settle. So those got settled, and the CCSD was reimbursed to $2,700 for that hydrant. Moving along to the District Council Legal Services, so there's two separation. That was litigation update, and here are the legal services and the litigation expenses that are involved. You know, we have a monthly contract with Carmel and Akasha. It's a retainer of $6,600 that we pay for 40 hours of work. And then there's an offset if there's a plus or minus. So if they do more work, we pay more. If they do less work, it's a credit that's offset. These expenses are budgeted within the professional services line item in each department. So we have gone to allocating those costs out as they're directly related to those services. And then the current litigation expenses are for defending actions. There's none that the CCSD has filed against anyone. So we attached the spreadsheet, which you've seen in a similar format when I reported it back, I believe, in October. And as far as the district council expenses for the first half of the fiscal year, they total roughly $43,000, and that's about 54% of the total budgeted of almost $80,000. I believe with almost half the time expiration that we'll be able to meet that budget because there's some months that we have very little services and some months that we have more. The issue came in with regard to the litigation services, and we're right now have expended $36,000, roughly $37,000, which is about 73% of the budgeted total of $50,000. So you'll see when we present our mid-year budget, we're going to be doing some swapping back in the professional services line items of increasing that just to get us through the land watch trial and the petition, the hearing, and then the potential for the Lindsay hearings and trials. So those amounts will be increased for litigation and everything that's ready to be bid out to get this thing moving along. So Bob Gressens and I just need to sit down with Mike Kirkendall and Jim Adams and figure out what our next move is going to be or recommendation will be, but I wanted to make sure you knew that had been concluded. Attached is the Vanscoyuc report for December. I make note of the Mission Country Disposal 2010 cleanup days for spring. It's April 26th through 30th. And for fall, the cleanup days are scheduled for September 27th through October 1st. This is the time that customers can put out extra recycling, green waste, garbage. It's on our regular pickup day, and there's no charge. If there's larger items, however, those need to be coordinated with Mission Country, and I think there's a small fee, $5 or $10, to get those picked up. I make note of the holiday notice on Monday, February 15th, that our offices and field operations will be closed in observance of President's Day. Any service interruptions or emergencies can be reported to our 24-hour answering service at 927-6223. Our next PROS Commission meeting is tomorrow at 10 a.m. here at the Vets Hall. And then I had mentioned last month about those corresponding changes to the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve Management Plan that need to be made. Well, they've kind of gotten pushed off while we're working with the firm of Firma on our geotech analysis. So I just want to make note of that. Moving along to the finance report. Al reports there were no disbursements in excess of $100,000 during the month of December 2009. We are right on target for our property tax revenues. They're coming in as budgeted. And we make note of the first half of the state's 8% takeaway that was withheld from the January 8th payment to the CCSD from the Slo County tax assessor. So at the same time, we're also receiving the money from the Prop 1A securitization program. And you'll see that on his next finance manager's report because it'll be down here in the reserves in the LAIF balance. The lathe balance, which is a nice transition, on December 31st was $4,420,257. This is an increase of $850,000 over November 30th, 2009. And that's because of the property tax receipts, the majority of them coming in December. And then it's $93,000 higher than it was a year ago, December 31st, 2008. We've summarized, and you'll see now, based upon the audited financials that you'll hear from on February 25th, that the general fund makes up the majority of those reserves at $4.3 million. The restricted reserves for resource conservation of the lot merger program are $54,000. There are no reserves for water and Western Main Street overlay and the water portion of the Stewart Street tank. And then for the general fund to the wastewater fund, it's about $19,000, and that's for the wastewater portion of SCADA and the wastewater portion of the Western Main Street overlay. We're going to be bringing back some recommendations based on finance committee discussion, et cetera, during the mid-year budget review to show how maybe some of these loans might not be necessary as a result of the budgeting. The fire chief's report, President Sanders was correct with regard to the fire hydrant maintenance program and the servicing. The two departments engaged in maintaining these a couple of years ago or a few years ago, and there was no formal program developed. So we've been talking over the past several months, Chief Miller, Jim Adams, and myself, and now we've got Bob Grusin's involved helping in utility operations to develop a program that's automated and one in which that we can refer to with regard to the hydrants and their operation. While aesthetically some of them may not be pleasing, they're all operational. And if they're not, then we get on those, okay? Now, what I'm trying to get us instilled into having is at least an annual or biannual valve turning. This community is a little different than ones that I've worked in that we annually used to test them. We'd open them up and flow them, okay? Well, we're working on an idea now that we may be able to do that, actually flow some of the hydrants. We're working on identifying the hydrants by flows. Maybe they have a different paint. Maybe they have a different number. We're going to go into a numbering system. So those ones that are on dirt roads, they have reflective numbers so the fire department can see them. When you start talking about going into folks' yard and messing with things around the fire hydrants, because there are standard procedures with regard to how far they need to be cleared around, we're going to upset some people because they have obviously covered them or planted to protect their visual look or view when they come out of their house or when they drive up to their house. But we are going to work with, and what we put in the budget is to work with one of our reservists on an independent contract to set up the program, get it going, get it automated, have it in a database, and then make determinations as to how we're going to proceed with them annually, particularly with any weed abatement around them. We can actually figure out ways to include that within our annual maintenance contract with the fire hazard fuel reduction program. So we're hoping to bring back a program once we get it further developed. We're working on the standard operating procedures now. Mark also reported that he and the fire questions or comments, I'll be available.
Mr. Grusin.
Thank you, Tammy. I'll be very brief. You saw the well level charts. Our aquifers are full, so I'm not going to get into that unless you have a specific question on one of those charts, but they are full and remain so. Just briefly, I'm meeting tomorrow at RBF on the Stewart Street tank project as well as the rodeo grounds pump station replacement project on the environmental clearance documents for those that are intended to be an initial study mitigating neg deck. So we're dusting those off and moving forward on those. There's been some coordination work on the initial study negative deck surrounding the geotechnical and hydrogeologic investigation at the Santa Rosa Creek beach area. So we're continuing to work with the Corps on what they're doing as well. The close of written comments is February 18th. For our particular initial study negative deck that's out there being reviewed right now by the public. And other than that, we did have an emergency sewer repair last week that was behind Orlando in a swale or deep ravine area where the erosion had uncovered a 8-inch diameter sanitary sewer. So I know it was... It went very well. Mike Kuykendall deserves a lot of credit in developing a very detailed approach to ensure there was no potential overflow into the area. We had assistance from all departments. The fire department helped us. Facilities and recreation helped us. Water department helped us, and of course, the entire wastewater department was involved. And we had local contractor Bob Wright helped us out. And basically, we had a problem with a manhole that had to be bypassed. So this was all coordinated last week and completed last week without incident. And we'll have a permanent repair become part of a future capital improvement project for that area. But the coordination was fabulous. I mean, everybody helped out, including the California Conservation Corps. They formed a sort of a bucket brigade with sandbags to help us make sure the sewer was covered and properly supported with sandbags in that area. So it went very well. And again, all departments should be commended for the coordination.
Is it in Washington yet, that approval? Would you know?
I meant to research that and check with my Army Corps contact, and I didn't have a chance before this.
I believe it's still in San Francisco.
Still in San Francisco. Yeah. It sounds like a song.
It's the Corps. Yeah, exactly.
But I do have communications into the colonel to ask and get the status.
Important.
So I'm waiting for his response.
Another thing, perhaps, to ask to our federal advocate, that the jobs bill, there's a bent in Washington to conserve funds. And that's one that is very, very important to us. Of course, that $30 million that's allocated to things like we would be doing with DSAL. Question is, in his view, is that in jeopardy? And would we be in jeopardy from that standpoint? If you would ask that for next time, that'd be important. The final thing is that I've been contacted. I think Mr. Hellman was one that started, but several people have talked to me, not only about Windsor and Nottingham, I think it is the problem, but what is left. There's a big, I guess, mountain of dirt or whatever. Maybe you could comment on that. But people have said it's dangerous as far as travel in and out of along Windsor. And so that's a problem, and I'd like to know, what are we going to do? Is that county or is that us?
Right. I know Jim Adams has been handling that. He met with the county representative on that a couple days back, and they went over the areas that have to be repatched. I think he has it properly cordoned off with barricades.
Yeah.
People can get around it okay, including emergency vehicles. It's at Huntington and Windsor.
Huntington.
What's out there is a cold patch right now. The pavement did get popped up. There was a hot patch done on an earlier repair in December. That got popped up with the break that occurred recently, and then we have to restore that pavement yet. Mm-hmm. So that'll be done on a permanent fix again based on the direction we've gotten from the county's representative on right-of-ways and encroachment permits. So they have been meeting on that and discussing it, and that will be followed up on. I can't tell you exactly when.
By them?
Jim is on top of it.
By them or by us?
By us.
By us, okay.
By us, and that's going to be an added expense.
And some Mullins. Right. That's one family that was affected.
Right, and when I mentioned that we were proactive in calling SDRMA, they got an adjuster assigned, and that adjuster immediately contacted them, and I know they've contacted the Mullins. So I'm aware of all, and we can't go into any details.
Okay, but there is issues. Contact.
They've all were immediately contacted. Anyone who called my office and asked for a claim form immediately got it, and we listed it, and we let the adjuster know that anyone who's requested a claim form. So they've had many conversations with the adjuster.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes, Director Clift.
On the Burge lawsuit, as I read that, it indicated that the judge also found for us on costs. And it looks like here on the amounts here from just the last years, around $20,000 or so. Are we going after those costs?
It won't be attorney's fees, unfortunately. It's court costs.
Only court costs.
Only court
and
costs.
And as a public entity, we pay very few court costs. Okay. So we're still getting that together with Mike McMahon, who's the district counsel that represents us, but it is not the attorney's fees, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
It's a few hundred dollars, unfortunately. Okay. For a totally frivolous lawsuit and absolute waste of the taxpayers' money to the tune of $44,000.
Wasn't he found to be a victim?
What's that, Director Chalton?
Wasn't he found to be a
vexatious litigator?
Yeah, right.
That's
whatever
correct.
That means, right? Okay. One thing I wanted to clarify was the voluntary lot merger. Someone asked me whether the district was using our funds for that, but in fact, we're not.
That's correct. Yeah. These are restricted use funds based upon the code. And these have been either lot transactions that happened before, you know, a couple of years ago, and most recently was the Granville one where you stated it specifically within the agreement that those funds would be used for the voluntary lot merger. And that's because it was associated with that. So all of those funds dump into those. There's no general funds. There's no water and sewer funds or billing funds.
Thank you.
Any other questions of the general manager or district engineer? Yes, Director Clift.
No.
Oh, you don't have one. Okay, fine. All right, then we'll move on to member and committee reports, and I believe Director Clift has a report that he would like to give.
Yes. At the last meeting and a little bit here today, too, there was public comment on the testing, well testing, geotech testing. And social groups here in town. Three of them were bad emails, so it was a net of 24 emails that went out. The email included the article that was written in the San Luis News, quoted from that Kathy Tanner's article of January 7th in the San Luis News. And I also asked then to the people if whether it was time, if they wanted to speak up and tell directors what they really wanted to, whether they wanted this testing or not. I asked them if they were interested in the testing or supported the testing, would they please return the email to me at my personal email address? No funds of CCSD were expended on this project. And that if they wanted to and felt that way, they could forward it on to their friends and neighbors. Again, my experience in marketing is that you, if you're very targeted, you will probably get about a 50% response. In the insurance business, if you get a 3% response, you're just happier than a lark. But this one being a little more targeted situation to people. Now, let me describe who I sent these to. Every person I sent them to, not one of those people have ever testified in this hearing venue during the time I have been on this board about water in any sense of the shape. I tried not to send it to anybody who would be overly, committed because of their occupation or such to that kind of thing. And I thought, well, if I got 12 back, then I would read them, because read them into the testimony so that there would be 12 supporters as compared to the maybe 12 that were detractors in the past. In a 10-day period after I sent it out, I received 106 responses from 106 people who supported the testing. I'm going to only read about three of them because they fell into about three categories. And I understand, I'm going to stir up a hornet's nest here, but that's fine. Second type that came in was, as you know from our previous discussions, I fully support drilling these test holes and ultimately building a desal plant. It is clear that all of California must plan to find new sources of water, and a desal plant is an excellent solution for us. In fact, I believe that we should convert that our primary water source to desal as much as possible and reduce our reliance on groundwater so that we can restore the natural flow of our local creeks and perhaps improve the habitat for steelhead and other of our animal friends. It is important that we in Cambria not follow the path of Los Osos. And again, I won't necessarily use the name. The final kind of area that was discussed was ones like this, and said, I support the Santa Rosa test wells because they are essential in determining if this location can support the required amount of seawater to operate the proposed desalination plant for the citizens of Cambria. There were several in the category saying, we need information before you can make a decision. So they fell in that kind of a category. And I guess what I'm going to say to the board is that very unscientific. And I'm also going to say to you that only one of the ones I received is from someone who has appeared at this venue and expressed support or disapproval of our efforts to find an alternate water source. Every one of these other people, in fact, more than half of them, I have never heard their name. I don't know them. I did look up to see if they were registered voters, and every one of them was a registered voter that I have never heard from, never seen. Wouldn't be able to pick them out if they were sitting in this crowd today. So I'm going to say, on a very unscientific way, there is a lot of support out there for what we're doing as a representative of these people. And I'm going to begin to listen to those people who want to contact me or want to email me or and tell me what they think on this issue. So I just want to I'd let you know.
Speak on this item from the audience. One from Elizabeth Bentenhausen.
I want to quickly thank Mr. President, whoever made the coffee. It's just really delicious. I find this really intriguing, Muriel. You can imagine that I'm not bored when I listen to you, ever. And I wasn't bored today. But I have a serious request, because I think that it would help those of us who are certainly raising questions about the I'm looking at you. Excuse me, Mr. President, I should be looking at you according to the bylaws.
You're perfectly entitled to look at Director Clift if you'd like.
But I would really appreciate it if you would respond to all these people and ask them to participate in a very important thing that is now open to us in Cambria, and that is to give public comment on the initial study and the proposed negative declaration, for which they will need to read that material, and they will also need to read the Army Corps of Engineers coastal consistency determination, because that's the only specificity really of this geotech hydro hyphen geological study that is being proposed for the beach. And I say that because I know that I speak a lot on these things, but I give it an immense amount of work. My perspective is clear, but I try not simply to offer an opinion, but rather an informed opinion. And if these people all want that testing to happen on San Simeon State Beach at Santa Rosa Creek, and also on, as it turns out, Shamel Park Beach, which I didn't know existed before, but now I do. If they want the testing to happen, I think it would behoove them and us all for them to make an informed decision about what the testing involves in all its aspects. So your unscientific sample is an intriguing sample, but I would ask them and you then to give a more informed study than perhaps they have. Maybe they're already forming their responses officially by the February deadline. But if they all come to the hearing that will then be held on the neg deck with their position, fantastic. The more of us in a democracy who participate in the progress, the better. And maybe I'll send out a scientific email myself.
Thank you. The next request to speak on this item is from Mary Webb.
on down here, and for you to say that, you know, you can just send an email out and ask if people are opposed testing on the beach in such a simplistic fashion is just, I find outrageous. If, you know, if those people, do they even understand that you're talking about drilling on the beach in front of Shamel Park? I'm not sure by your email if you even have actually explained to those people that what they're agreeing to. And I totally would agree with Elizabeth. I'd love to see those people down here. Do they live here? Or are they on the water wait list? Did the email go to UNCLOG or one of the other organizations that are supporting people who are trying to build here in the future who don't vote here? You said you don't know those people. Guess what? We probably don't know those people. But you do know the people who live right here. I'm your neighbor. I helped elect you. I'm looking here for fiscal responsibility, for explanation to the questions. We haven't even had questions answered. We've been asking here for 2 years about this project. At the very least, we've demanded that if you want to go forward with DSAL, get the environmental review done. Put it through the full test. Put geotech drilling, tie it back together with desalination, which is what it is, one project called desalination. Put the whole thing in front of the environmental review process and let the agencies look at the information, look at the steelhead, look at the otters, look at the elephant seals, and tell us exactly what damage it will do and if it's worth it and what it is really going to cost and if that's worth it and what it's going to cost us. Not a push poll done on an email list. And you know, that's amazing that you resorted to that, because none of us have. We haven't been submitting emails around to each other asking this in such a simplistic fashion, or standing out. We're not standing at the farmer's market with all of our documents about how big these drill rigs and just trying to get opinion polls from people walking by us. We're actually trying to do the homework. I hope you would do the same thing. At least give us the credit for that.
Thank you for your comment, Mary Webb. I think Director Cliff wants to respond.
Yeah, as I indicated, every one of those people are residents of this community. Every one of them are voters in this community. Not one email did I send to anybody that was a leader in any organization, whether it was UNCLOG, Green Space, anything. They were just average people. And I was also amazed at some of the comments that they are. Whether they will show up at a hearing or not, that's their choice, and I'm not interested in demanding one way or the other. So,
could I make a response?
Director Shaldicott.
Thank you. I would just like to say that over a period of 16 years and on four separate occasions, I have been voted onto this board, usually at the top of the votes, and my platform has been desalination on the beach, wherever it might be. I've never hid the fact that I'm 100% in favor of desalination, and I don't think I've lost one vote as a result of it. Thank you.
Yeah. At the last election, there were six candidates. Five were pro-desal. One was anti-desal. The candidate who was anti-desal finished last. It's a referendum on desal. Mary, we don't want to drag this out forever. If you've got something,
I don't want to drag it out either. But the referendum on the last election was for fiscal responsibility, and the reason that people are up here right now is for fiscal responsibility. We hoped at the very least that you would look at the fiscal aspects of this project, and that common sense would dictate that you wouldn't go there. But the ideology of desal is pushed far more apparently than fiscal responsibility, and for that, it's just really sad.
Well, I think you'll find a lot of people in town who disagree with you. And I think it really doesn't do the process a whole lot of good to demean those who happen to take a position on desal on the alleged basis that they haven't done their homework. I think you'd be surprised at the number of people in this town who have done their homework, are well-informed, and who speak to us quite often but don't happen to come to the meetings. The next request to speak is from Jeff Hellman.
Jeff Hellman, pretty contentious issue.
I would like to say that one thing that this issue has that has a lot in common with climate change is there's something here that nobody really knows for sure, but everybody is assuming they know the truth here on what is or isn't going on. Director Clift is really onto something here by asking a bunch of people. However, I could understand where a sample universe of 27 people out of 6,000 might get skewed and some people might abuse it. What you are really onto something, though, is that no one really knows if everybody in the town is or isn't, you know, for this thing. Now, you can't really use authority, say, the people in this town want this thing, or the opponents can say with authority the people in this town don't want it. But you're groping in the dark, and everybody's contentious, and there's arguments on both sides, like climate change, where there's imperfect information. Here you can have perfect information. Director Sanders, I took a graduate course once in statistics. You need more than 27 people in the universe.
What's your sample, Director Clift? 100 and.
But that was a feedback. He said he sent out 27 and got back 100. That indicates to me, common sense tells me, somebody shot that over to a group that was really for D-cell. I myself, I'm not, you know, for or against radically. I know that we need an alternative water supply. I'm not totally convinced that D-cell is the best relative to reservoirs, but whatever. I know we need water supply. But why don't we deal with truth and fact instead of heresy and do a real survey? I mean, it'll be a teeny-weeny fraction of what you've already spent just on things that got us nowhere so far. So you're onto something. Why don't we follow through with that and find out and you know, practice what we preach. We believe in democracy. Let the people in this community speak in a scientific, you know, verifiable, truthful manner. Thanks.
Thank you. Yes, Director McKinnon.
Just a comment to Mr. Hellman. You said it perfectly. There has been a referendum. It has been, I would say, equally with desal as well as fiscal responsibility. They go hand in hand. And if one didn't fit, I'm sure the members that were elected would not have been elected because they were very firm on the fact that desal has proven time and time again as the best chance for an alternative water system in Cambria.
I might add, too, that the gentleman who finished last also ran on a fiscal responsibility platform. The last request to speak on this item is from Art Chapman.
Good afternoon. My name is Art Chapman.
Afternoon.
I don't think we're groping in the dark on this issue. I was one of the people who responded to the survey, so I guess I am part of the representative or non-representative sample. I also was one of the people who voted for desal during the referendum several years ago. We've experienced several years of prolonged droughts. So I fully support your direction. I expect to hear the naysayers. But I know that this community needs a source of water that we can rely upon that isn't directly dependent upon nature. And I want to see you continue in this direction. And I also want to see those people who I know and who I don't know, but I fully intend to support those people coming and speaking at these meetings so that you get a balanced approach to public opinion on this issue. And I noted just the other day, I believe it was last night on the news, I was listening to Southern California News, Orange County, who is not known as a liberal sanctuary, Orange County now is proposing building two desal plants, one in Newport Beach and one in Huntington Beach, because they are suffering the same thing we have been suffering with for a long time. They're losing their sources of water from the Northern California aquifer, and because of that continuously reduced source of water, we will begin seeing a larger number of coastal communities throughout California moving toward D-cell. And I support your doing so.
Thank you, Mr. Chapman. That's the last request to speak on this item.
Art mentioned the vote. It was in the year 2000, I believe, that there was a advisory vote on desalination, and I believe the vote was 58% in favor. It just seemed to it's a lot longer ago than we thought.
It's been a while. That's right. All right. With that, we will move on to the consent calendar. Item number 7, is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve items 7A and 7B, the consent agenda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. There are no hearings and appeals today, so we will move to item 9, regular business. Item 9A is consideration of adoption of resolution 02-
New PROS commissioners commenced. We posted it at the CCSD office, the Vets Hall, and the library on our website, and then in the Cambrian on December 31st and January 7th. Also, thanks to Kathy and Bert, we got a little article in the Tribune just right before the deadline. That was Monday, January 11th, and we received the 4 applications, which you have attached to the staff report. 3 of them were from the incumbents. We met with Director Chaldicott on January 13th as the Parks and Rec liaison, and we looked at them and looked at the selection criteria based on the applicant's leadership, team-building skills, community involvement with groups of various ages, familiarity with parks, recreation, open space issues, and related work experience. And the nominations that are being moved for your consideration today are Ben Bolden, Gail Robinette, and Michael Thompson. There was also a suggestion, too, that the other applicant, the remaining one, Warner Koch, that he might be interested in serving on one of the PROS Commission committees. And I know that might be, it's not going to be discussed tomorrow because it's not on the agenda, but they are going to ask me to bring it back at the next meeting, you know, for committee opportunities and give Mr. Koch an opportunity to see if he wants to attend a meeting and get involved in one of the committees. The other item in that other resolution, 03-2010, is with regard to our ex officio members. I noted whenever I brought this to the board a couple of months ago with regard to the appointment process that we had not formally gotten your approval, the board's approval, for the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve and Coast Unified School District as ex officio members. So I'm doing that today as a cleanup item. And that concludes the report.
Any questions of the general manager? I have no request to speak from the public. Oh, I'm sorry, Director Chaldicott.
Well, I just want to reiterate what Tammy said. We have 3 reappointments we recommend. They're all extremely good. Ben Bolden, Gail Robinette, and Michael Thompson are extremely good. They are very familiar with all operations that are going on. They put a lot of time into this, and I'm only too pleased to back this recommendation. And Mr. Koch, I think he could be a valuable member of one of the smaller groups where you sort of get your groundwork and just what parks are doing. I also think that the ex officios are really good. We get a lot of response from the Fiscalini Ranch. They're right there, so any questions we could answer straight away. And it's a partnership. We do things and they do things, and we'll work together. And the exciting thing is
it's been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 02-2010, approving appointment of Parks and Recreation and Open Space Commissioners. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Next is Resolution 03-2010. Is there a motion to approve?
I move. So move.
Second.
It's moved and seconded to approve Resolution 03-2010, approving appointment of ex officio members of the PROS Commission. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. That takes us to item 9B, which is consideration of adoption of Resolution 04-2010, ratifying confidential non-exempt positions and side letter number 2 to amended payment and compensation plan for management and confidential employees. Madam General Manager?
Yes, thank you. Back in 2006, there were 2 administrative technician 3 positions or employees who were classified as confidential non-exempt by me, and this was due to the confidential nature of their work. They are the prime leads in payroll, personnel benefits, labor negotiations, human resources, workers' comp, formal disciplinary action, legal litigation coordination, liability claims, policy development, and then they serve as the district clerk backup. So they have access to all confidential records and or information and anything that's privileged by our litigating team or legal district counsel. There was no pay increases as a result of the classification. It was more out of ensuring that the confidential nature of their jobs remained so, because they were members of the SEIU Local 620. And we went through all the proper processes with regard to reclassifying them. Okay, so the first resolution 04-2010 confirms that they are confidential, so that everyone's of record and we know that. Because as a result of these recent negotiations with SEIU Local 620, there was feelings among their membership that maybe these two employees or positions didn't belong in SEIU Local 620, and that was because of their allegiance toward not just me as a person, but to the position of general manager and the confidential nature of their jobs. So I pushed it back and said, you know what, if it's an issue with you all as a membership, you go out there and talk to the employees. They did, and the general consensus came back that, you know, their preference was that they, you know, weren't necessarily comfortable members of the union, and then I had the authority to remove them, so I did that. So I notified the union, we did that, and then that left these two employees out there and not belonging to anybody who had signed a side letter. So
is there a motion to approve resolution 04-2010 and side letter number 2 as explained?
I so move.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt resolution 04-2010 ratifying confidential non-exempt positions and side letter number 2 to amended payment and compensation plan for management and confidential employees. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Just a comment.
Yes.
General Manager, could you continue that dialogue with rest of staff?
Well, this was it was a particular interesting situation that I found myself in, sitting across from the new stewards and them basically saying, well, it's your choice and your decision. And I thought, nice. You know, I don't want that to come back on management ever, that it was me who pulled them out. So it ended up working out the best for all of us.
I think they're two extremely good employees.
They are. I appreciate that.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Monique Madrid and Kathy Fry have more tenure than I do here. And they are some of the most, they're just incredibly multi-skilled and talented. And having them in lead positions right now as a result of not having that assistant finance manager has just worked wonders and done very well for the morale. So I appreciate that. Along with we have Kathy Choate, too, who's been there a long time, and Bob Gressens. It's just awesome to have that team together. So.
You bet. I join with Director Chaldicott in his complimentary comments on these two employees in particular. Okay, that takes us to item 9C, which is consideration of adoption of resolution 05-2010 approving Vanskoyuk Associates Professional Services Agreement. Madam General Manager.
Okay, thank you. This is the next term, 6 months from January 1st through July 31st, at $62.25 per month for a total of $37,350. You'll notice this time I didn't add expenses because, quite frankly, they never bill us for any expenses. If they're over here or they're in California, they've absorbed those expenses because they have several clients. So this time, Greg Burns and I talked, and we didn't anticipate in this time period that there would be any. So that's the amount. I manage this contract, and during the mid-year budget review, it's going to fit within the admin's budget, and there will be, you know, still the requisite surplus. So since we're a couple of months behind, it was necessary to get this on board so I can pay them for their January services, which I'm behind on, and then go ahead because they're paid at the beginning of the month, on the 1st. So I did note in here that due to the success with working with...
Any questions of the general manager? I do have two requests to speak from members of the public. The first is Lynn Harkins.
Good afternoon, Board. I'd like to put out to begin with that I think there ought to be a forensic audit with regard to all these desalination expenditures. If the Army Corps already has $30 million that Director McKinnon spoke to for jobs, I'm wondering why we're paying to lobby on behalf of the Army Corps. I should think they have their own their own way of dealing with things. But nonetheless, I about a desal plant, which would, it's my understanding, entail significant costs even when shut down. I think there are better ideas for the 6,000 you propose a month. I'll skip over possibly implementing the forest management plan, which has been neglected for 6 years. And I'll go to an education plan for K through 12 about sources of their water and ways to conserve and why. Or you might underwrite dropping the price on the in-home remote readout that every ratepayer could have in their house so that they could see easily how much water they're using and if they got credits on their bill for reducing the amount of water that they used. I think you might yield a better result than just doing punitive rates charges when they use excessive amounts in drought conditions. But primarily, I want to ask, when are we going to move towards considering tertiary treatment of our wastewater in this community? Are we going to be the only North Coast community, since Los Osos, Morro Bay, Cayucas, and San Simeon are all looking at tertiary wastewater treatment, which is the only responsible thing to do with our wastewater? We are currently putting 650,000 to 1 million gallons a day of partially treated. Yes, it's secondary, and yes, it meets antiquated recycled watering requirements, but we're not testing for the kind of emerging contaminants that are well known to exist in our wastewater now. And it's, you know, it's a crime not to be attending to this. For us not to be on the cutting edge of using fungi and hydrogen peroxide to eradicate endocrine disruptors. It's our job as stewards to make sure that we leave this section of the coast in as good a shape as we came to it in, and it's already degraded. So we're behind the. So I would suggest you hire a consultant to write some grants, because the integrated regional water management funding for this year, and the truth is it doesn't matter what any of our opinions are about desalination. What matters is the law that protects the endangered species. What matters are the laws that protect public health and safety in terms of water quality. This is not an opinion poll issue. It's and I will say that, you know, what you did is a perfect marketing ploy, but it has nothing to do with the substantive issue of whether or not desal is the moral, ethical, or ecologically sound way to deal with our water problem. Orange County was mentioned. Orange County is doing tertiary treatment, hydrogen peroxide, UV treatment of their wastewater, pumping it out, letting it sink into the ground and recharging their aquifers that way. And they did that at a cost of $400 million before they ever got to desalination. We need to do similar things. That ocean out there, everyone in this room who's got an economic interest in this community is shooting themselves in the foot by degrading the nearshore environment. Secondary wastewater treatment with a little trip underground, that's what's laughably called the freshwater mount that separates the ocean water from our inland San Simeon wells. Freshwater mount is what it's referred to, and it's secondary wastewater. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you for your comments. The last request to speak on this item is from Mary Webb.
According to the February, today's manager's report, the CCSD is agreeing to pay Van Skoyak and Associates the $6,225 a month for professional consulting services to the CCSD, including federal agency and legislative planning advocacy related to the ongoing progress and funding of the desalination project. When you look at the actual memo of agreement with Van Skoyak, it is worded differently. It reads, the CCSD is retaining Van Skoyak Associates as consultants and advisors with regard to various federal agencies and legislative issues concerning funding for major capital projects. Mr. Burns of Van Skoyak has not reported on lobbying for capital projects other than desalination, which I understand Mr. Sanders refuses to call an actual project. What efforts has VSA made on behalf of Cambrians for the SCADA system, for the rodeo grounds pumping station replacement? Has Mr. Burns investigated grant money or stimulus monies for water recycling, for water conservation, for dam legislative planning advocacy related to the ongoing progress and funding of the desalination project?
I respectfully request the directors to vote no to paying one lobbyist $74,700 per year to focus solely on desalination to the exclusion of all other projects that could provide water solutions in Cambria. For the record, Cambrians have never voted for desalination. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I have no more requests to speak from members of the audience on this item. Board members, is there a motion and a second to approve Resolution 05-2010?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 05-2010, approving Vanscoyac Associates Professional Services Agreement. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. That brings us to item 9D, which is a consideration of a request for nominations for the Local Agency Formation Commission Special District Member. Madam General Manager.
Okay, thank you. We received the attached letter dated January 8th from David Church, who is the new LAFCO Executive Officer. He took Paul Hood's place when Paul retired. And this is to see if the CCSD board was interested in nominating a director to fill the special district seat on LAFCO, and the deadline to for them to receive it is February 11th. This is as a result of Barbara Mann retiring. Mm-hmm. She was a special district representative. Vice President Merle Clift has expressed an interest and in this position, so he's one of the board members that might be interested in a nomination. The commission is comprised of 7 regular members. There's 2 county, 2 city, 2 special district, and 1 public member. And then there's 4 alternate members. There's 1 county, 1 city, 1 special district, and 1 public member, and they each serve 4-year terms. And then I made a note that on page 53 of the agenda package, that's the current listing of members and their terms. And you'll see in the middle, the special district member is vacant. So that concludes my report.
Any questions of the general manager? I have one request to speak from the public, Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President Sanders. I would urge you and your fellow directors to nominate Director Clift, and I'd like to say thank you to Director Clift for stepping up as a nominee to LAFCO's open special district position. He must love government meetings, or is padding his resume, or maybe he's just collecting nameplates.
And working with LAFCO. And
that's right.
So it's a good opportunity.
Now, the CCSD does not provide a psychologist to you, so you know you should have your head examined for volunteering for this. But I'll leave it at that.
Well, there's one option, which means you might not get elected.
So. Well, knowing you, you'll make a very serious run for it if you're nominated. Board members, Director Clift has expressed interest in being nominated. What's your pleasure? Let's approve this by a formal vote. Is there a motion to nominate Director Clift for the position of public member on the Local Agency Formation Commission?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to nominate Director Clift for the vacant special district member on the Local Agency Formation Commission. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. You are hereby officially nominated,
right,
Director Clift.
Okay.
And it will come back to you if there's more than one person nominated. A ballot will be mailed, and the board will have to formally vote. So, yeah.
Terrific.
There has been more than one nominated, so you'll end up with a vote later.
Okay, that brings us to item number 10, the second public comment period. I have 3 requests to speak. The first is from Amanda Rice.
Thank you, President Sanders. I just wanted to speak to something that was removed from the agenda, and I think that you're going to be considering at the next meeting, which was the committee assignment.
Yes.
As chair of the North Coast Advisory Council, I'd just like to say that we welcome the continued connection between the CCSD and the North Coast Advisory Council, and are glad to have a liaison attending our meetings. And there are some upcoming county projects that may be of interest or affect the CCSD directly, including grading, the land use, and a revision of the land use and circulation elements, development of the county water master plan and the another bridge replacement, the bridge over Main Street near Santa Rosa Creek Road. So we definitely welcome that and hope Great. You continue that. Thank you.
Super. Thank you very much. The next request to speak is from Elizabeth Bentenhausen.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I want to thank whoever is now in charge of the website, CCSD website, for putting on so quickly the initial to the website where the study is already there on the initial study, and it's comprehensible only if you also read the Army Corps of Engineers coastal consistency determination. So I would strongly request that that document also be put on the website. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The last request to speak is from Jerry McKinnon.
Jerry McKinnon. I can't resist coming to these meetings. Carlos makes such good coffee.
Absolutely.
It's excellent, right. I just can't get my fill, so I have to stick around to the end. But I am curious about things, and on the expense, if we look on page 23, 7 of 10, Benjamin Franklin says, watch the pennies and the dollars will take care of themselves. Well, this is a very, very penny item. And of course, my primary interest is in the welfare of this building. And when we consider the welfare of the building, we must look at the total budget for facilities and resources, because you do not have a page that is set aside just for the vets hall. We look down to the Soto's Market. $35.88 charged to facilities and resources for meeting supplies. Since the agenda is made by the administration, why aren't the meeting supplies charged against the administration budget rather than facilities and resources? Thank you. That's my question.
Thank you, Jerry. Madam General Manager? Response?
That's because it was used in facilities and resources. They went to Soto's and it was either lunch for the 3Cs or some other supplies that they needed at Soto's for facilities and resources out in the field.
Okay, thank you. Concludes the agenda. Unless board members have any comments or additional business, we are adjourned.